of Black and Native Americans and the homeless population is no accident. It is a result of historic and ongoing racism, from slavery and violent land theft to informal and government-backed housing discrimination that persists even till this very day. Research shows that because of these massive burdens, people of color, particularly Black and Native Americans, are more likely to experience poverty and other vulnerabilities that place people at risk of homelessness.
It's really sad. I believe that there's never been a better time than ever in the history of the world for a minority in America to rise up and make an amazing life for themselves. But I feel like there's certain communities and certain cultures that are told from a young age that you will never be anything because of the color of your skin. You will never be anything because this group over here is oppressing you. You are the oppressed. You are the oppressed. They are the oppressors. And I feel like the Black community, unfortunately, has been victims of that messaging so long that maybe some of them believe it. My message would be, no, you're not a victim. You're not oppressed. You're not. There's nothing wrong with you because of the color of your skin. Get out there and get it. Crush. It's amazing. It's a beautiful thing, you know? And it's interesting because I feel like in America, that is what the leftist, progressive, liberal mentality wants to tell the Black communities, that you are oppressed. You are less than because of the color of your skin. You will never amount to anything. And that's a horrible way. And so I feel like a lot of people fall into that victim mentality.
But economic and social vulnerabilities don't tell the entire story. Data shows the poverty alone does not account for the disproportionate representation of Black Americans experiencing homelessness, for example. The homeless response system, which triages, supports, and rehouses people experiencing homelessness, has not been designed to identify or respond to racial disparities.
They fall into the other cultural programming that comes through the Black community, which is like rap music, drug culture, gangster culture, violence. These things are perpetuated in that community, and it's hard for anybody to rise up out of it. But no, you're not a victim. You don't have to commit crime. You can thrive. And I know being a white man saying these things, it may be construed as insensitive because, yes, I know that that's very hard living in an impoverished community, lack of resources, lack of healthy food. I know all this stuff to be true. But still, there's ways to rise above, and there's never been a better time than now to do it. So my heart goes out absolutely to anybody that's suffering with homelessness, drug addiction. And then once you get caught up in the system, again, I know you could also make the same claim about how the African-American population is disproportionately represented in the prison system. And so, you know, I think it goes back to drug laws, too. Once the drug laws get reformed, then you don't have so many Black people getting harassed.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. This is a special coverage of a live event.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we now interrupt our usual programming to bring you special coverage of this event. On 4th of November 1979, student followers of the path of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, took over the U.S. den of espionage, the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. The founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini, called it a second revolution. Every year on 4th of November, students and pupils, university students and school pupils meet with the anniversary of the 4th of November takeover of the U.S. den of espionage. Demonstrations and rallies are held throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran. We now go over live to Press TV headquarters for this year's rallies and demonstrations.
Rallies to condemn U.S. Policies and other Western states and leaders' arrogance with respect to Iran, to the region, to the world, pushing for their own policies, their own narratives, manipulating governments and landscapes and geopolitical politics the way they see fit. This is one of many protests that you are witnessing a live image to. Earlier brought you images from Isfahan, Yazd, Shiraz, and the eastern city of Mashhad. Now, Ali, equating anti-Zionism, anti-fascism, or anti-apartheid, as well as pro-Palestinian, with anti-Semitism. We see this push by the U.S., by the Canadian government, by the government in London, in Westminster, in Paris. And it seems like we all know that it is a stretch, and it seems fewer and fewer people are actually falling for it. But where's the rationale to that, to say pro-Palestinian means you hate Jews?
It's an excuse for them to pass draconian measures to limit freedom of expression within their countries, in spite of them claiming to be the bastions of freedom of expression and even supporting regime change in other countries where they claim freedom of expression is under attack. So in reality, they only guarantee the freedom to follow falsehood. Those who stand for the truth, truth is illegal, officially and unofficially, in the West. So the equation is absolute fallacy. Number one, because Semites are a vast group of people. They include Arabs, they include Assyrians. So it's anybody who has any knowledge of anything, who isn't completely ignorant and uneducated, would understand what Semite actually is. And in addition to that, many Jewish people are actually of a non-Semitic background. There were several groups of people who converted to Judaism in large numbers, maybe 1,000 years ago. And then on the other hand, the most of the people who oppose these policies are not against Jews as a people, as a race. They're against people's actions. They're against people having wicked beliefs, which these actions spring out of. And this is especially true in the Islamic world, because the Islamic worldview, these godly spiritual worldview, does not believe in biological determinism, that you're born a certain way, you're going to remain that way, or that you have certain traits because of some race or ethnicity that you belong to. That was the Europeans' baggage, at least in the modern day. Even prior, Europeans also didn't believe in biological determinism when they were ruled by, for example, Catholicism. Catholics believed in the issue of the soul, and that your soul can be saved, and that it's about your beliefs and your actions. So even then, they believed that if a Jewish person changed their actions, they would be saved, and there would not be an issue anymore. The idea of biological determinism is a kind of post-God, liberal European ideology that we saw in recent centuries. And so they want to essentially superimpose the racist worldview of the Europeans onto the Islamic world. And that is a crime, and it's unacademic. Anybody who knows anything about what Muslims believe in knows that we are not a racialist religion, and we don't hate anybody because of how they were born. So, and especially in this occupation, it wouldn't matter what race the occupiers were, where they come from.
I want to give you a chance to finish your thought. But right now we have our Press TV correspondent on the ground. So if you could just stand by for a quick second, we're going to swing back over to the rally, the Day Against Global Arrogance rally. And we have Mahdi Abbasi, our Press TV correspondent, standing by at one of those rallies, the main one in the capital, Tehran. Mahdi, tell us where you're at, what you're doing, and what rally is there are saying.
Well, Daniel, as you can see, thousands of people from all walks of life, it's not just the students and young Iranians, but all people from all ages have gathered here today. Where I'm standing at is adjacent to the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran, which is now known as the Den of Espionage. Now, today, the official rally began at 9 a.m., and Iranians, thousands of them, took to the streets and walked the distance between Tehran's Palestine Square to the former embassy of the U.S. Now, people who were all carrying flags, chanting anti-arrogance slogans, and just minutes ago, a group of Iranian students read a statement in condemnation of the global arrogance as well as the oppressive regime of Israel for the crimes that it's committing in the Gaza Strip, killing innocent women, children, and men, civilians. They also voiced their support for the Palestinian resistance and vowed to continue their support until the full liberation of Palestine and the victory of the resistance. The weather is a bit cold. There was rain minutes ago. It's now stopped. However, this has not stopped Iranians from participating in this year's rally. The other thing that I have to mention that I observed was that the presence of Iranians in this year's event. You see, the numbers that you see here are uncanny, are not comparable to the previous years. Many more have this year gathered here today. As you can see, thousands of them. There is a long line of protesters who are calling for the liberation of Palestine, calling for an end to the support for Israel by mainly the U.S., which is providing military and financial support for the regime of Israel. Back to you, Daniel.
Yeah, it's funny that you should mention that, because that was going to be my second question to you, Matty. I was going to ask you exactly what you just said. I was going to ask you, is today the turnout this year greater due to events in Gaza, and we know that Iranians are very passionate about the atrocities befalling the women and children of the besieged Gaza Strip, and you answered that. You said the turnout has been huge this year, right?
Yeah, exactly. The numbers that you see here is not comparable to the previous years, as I told you. The thing is, why should Iranians have this feeling toward Palestinians? You see, when it comes to humanitarian issues, it's right. Yeah, we, the Iranian nation, have time and again proved that we are against any form of oppression anywhere in the world. However, the fact that this year's November 4th rally is coinciding with the ongoing war in the Gaza Strip highlights the fact that Iranians are, because today is also the day of fight against arrogance in Iran. It means that Iranians are against those who support the oppressor regime of Israel. And what are they? The U.S., the U.K., those who prepared the ground for years, decades of genocide against Palestinians.
Okay, thank you, Matty. And we're going to follow Matty and developments there in this rally in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This rally is to commemorate the day, National Day Against Global Arrogance, as Iranians commemorate this in their history and have been doing so every year annually for the last 43 years. Protesters gathered back in 1979, just a year after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, at the U.S. Embassy, storming it, calling it the Den of Espionage. And now, Ali Salam, you're talking about equating, pro-Palestinian, and we've seen it's just mind-boggling how many protests we've seen in support of Palestinians in the last 28 days. How is this not resonating with the Western leaders? They're not in just one or two countries. They're in their own countries, in multiple cities, at multiple sites, with thousands of people coming out and chanting in support of Palestinians. is supporting the fact for pushing for a ceasefire, pushing for humanitarian access, opening up humanitarian corridors. But we're not getting any answers. And how many people have to push for this, for these Western leaders to finally entertain the fact that maybe it's not the most prudent thing standing behind the Israeli regime when it carries out atrocities on this level. You're speaking about equating being pro-Palestinian with being anti-Semitism. Yet there are many people, Ali, that have lost their jobs in the last 28 days, their careers, university scholarships, university enrollment, and have been stigmatized for supporting Palestinians and no more.
Well, given the absolute crackdown of the liberal dictatorships upon people's freedom of expression, perhaps Iran should, just the same as the West, try to, you know, intervene in Iran for supposedly being against freedom of expression, which is not true. But in the case where the West is actually against freedom of expression, perhaps Iran should give them a taste of their own medicine by using their soft power and their diplomatic voice to support the freedoms of the people in the West as a kind of ironic form of poetic justice. But it just goes to show that the Western leaders are puppets who get into power because of money from the major banks, the central banking cartels like the Federal Reserve and the Bank for International Settlements, which are controlled by a handful of families like the Rothschilds and other such ultra-wealthy families who operate in secret without the media focusing on them because they also own the media. The only reason I think that these Western leaders are still in power is because, yes, there's a lot of people in the West waking up, and that's a good thing, but there's still many people who are just kind of brainwashed, and it's kind of like these indifferent people who kind of prop up the last threads that are holding on to the power of these regimes. Otherwise, these threads are eventually going to break. There's more people that are going to be waking up, especially as they realize that the Western leaders are only interested in securing the interests of the ultra-wealthy cartel owners, and they put their own people into poverty, they put their own people into hardship as they send money to Ukraine, as they send money to this genocide in the Zionist regime. So as they see it affects their own livelihood, they're going to demand more from their leaders, but their leaders are not going to budge, so eventually these leaders are going to have to go. Partially, some of the reason why these leaders are so dogmatic about the Zionist regime is, I'm sure this is a very well-known issue within many of the viewers, is the issue of Jeffrey Epstein. He was a Mossad agent. He was working for the Israeli government, as is the Ghislaine Maxwell. Her father was a big Mossad agent. Basically, they created honey traps for Western leaders and other powerful people in non-governmental, non-political positions to basically abuse children sexually on an island free from the eyes of law enforcement. And so they have this as a form of blackmail. Another form of blackmail is the nuclear weapons that the Zionist regime has, whether it be missiles or perhaps bombs that they hide in suitcases and they may detonate in a major European city. Either they take credit for it themselves, or perhaps more likely they blame it, they use it as a false flag and they blame it on somebody else. So between the pedophilia blackmail and the nuclear blackmail, these leaders, they don't want to budge under this. They themselves are corrupted, and they don't want to face the music. And even on top of that, they don't want to face their own people coming up and essentially swallowing them whole for stealing the money of the Western people and for destroying their societies and everything like that. So we can't rely on these leaders because they don't answer to the people, and their campaigns are not paid for by the people. So the more that people wake up, the less indifference there is in the West towards these issues, the less there can be propping up. So once it hits a critical mass, I do believe that the Macrons and Bidens and Trumps and Sunaks and Johnsons, and whether they're on the right or on the left, you know, they're all the same, two wings of the same bird. They're going to meet their own fate, and hopefully then the good-hearted people of the West will be in power. And hopefully they can have systems that actually respect godly values and a society that's turns towards God rather than this kind of very hedonistic, egotistical social philosophy that has governed them and has ruined their societies, both on a political level as far as what they do to their own people and around the world, and what happens to the souls of these people. The potential of the human being is greatly wasted by the criminal regimes of the West.
Thank you, Ali Salam. We're going to let you go there, bud, but I appreciate you spending so much time in this extended conversation on this National Day Against Global Arrogance. Ali Salam, their editor-in-chief at Basira, you bet. Basira Press, they're joining us from Moscow, and viewers that are joining us, these are live images from the Iranian capital. This is a rally also taking place in the Iranian city of cities of Mashhad, Shiraz, Isfahan, Yazd. I'm not sure if I mentioned Mashhad, but these are live images that you are witnessing now in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Joining us is Habiba Jaghouri, a journalist and activist, joining us from Adelaide. Hello, Habiba Jaghouri. Welcome to the talk here, this conversation. Your thoughts on Israeli bombardment continued that we're seeing of the besieged Gaza Strip, the mounting civilian death toll there, now over 9,200, over 3,600 children on this day, the National Day Against Global Arrogance.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a disgrace on humanity that the world is allowing such an atrocity to take place at the moment on the innocent people of Gaza, on the people that have been besieged and oppressed for over 75 years. At the moment, I've been reflecting, and I think the demonstrations that we are seeing coming out of the Western world, America and Europe and Australia, and these people that have come out and condemned this government of Israel and have asked their own governments to cut ties with Israel, to condemn Israeli government crimes, I think this is being Israel's worst nightmare from the West, because currently Israel's PR and their propaganda has been failing miserably this time. The events of this month have proven just how much they rely on lies to push forth their agendas. So whilst the death toll is mounting up in Gaza right now, whilst children are being slaughtered, and just 2 days ago how they bombed Abu Hussein school in the refugee camp of Jabalia, I think that this just is evident of what Israel wants to achieve. It is not about fighting terrorism, as they proclaim. They are the terrorists. It is about completely capturing Gazan sovereignty and annihilating Gaza. It's something that the world cannot look away from. It is something that has, as previously someone very special and honorable has mentioned, every free and honorable person has a duty to spread the truth.
Right, and when they tell the Palestinians there in Gaza to evacuate one place for another, and they end up bombing that second place, and you mentioned, I mean, is that, how can you become more terroristic than that?
You can't. You have reached the limit of oppression. Above this, you cannot go above that in oppression, because everything in this earth has its limit. And to bomb fleeing people, to bomb people that you told to flee, it's a war crime. It is a war crime. And unfortunately, this is the moments that you recognize institutions such as the UN and the International Criminal Court fail. They fail to hold accountable these crimes. And I think it's important, if anything, it's a lesson for us. And 13th of Avan, reflecting on the history of 13th of Avan, how essential grassroots movements is from people on the ground, how communities and ordinary people need to get together to change the world, to help the oppressed, to stop the Israeli government from committing these crimes, to hold them accountable, to hold their own states accountable. University students should protest against the weapons companies of their university. Right now, we can see that apparently in the U.S. today, there was a protest where they blocked a cargo ship going to Israel. It's drastic actions like this that is needed. Because you to bomb fleeing children, it's absolutely barbaric. And anyone that still thinks this is about fighting Hamas is greatly misinformed and greatly ignorant. You just need to open your eyes to see the actions that are committed every single day before October 7th by Israel.
I mean, if you're only fighting Hamas, then why are you blocking water, food, electricity, medical supplies, medicine. Why are there 300 trucks at the Rafah border crossing, and you're letting in like 10 or 15 once every 4 or 5 days? I mean, basically, this is everything that we have witnessed in the last 28 days, Habiba, is designed to choke out the civilian population.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Israel cannot do this without being granted impunity from the West, particularly the USA, particularly the country that has invaded multiple countries, whether it be Iran, China, whether it be in Cambodia, whether it be Peru, whether it be Greece in 67, whether it be Iraq, whether it be Somalia, Cuba, Democratic Republic of Congo. The USA is responsible for global hegemony. It is responsible for arming, supporting, and funding Israeli crimes. You have to look at it from the root. Right now, the citizens of the U.S. have a lot of responsibility, especially the Muslim communities inside America have a lot of responsibility, and that is to spread the message of the crimes to the people there, and that is to stop it, that is to protest, that is to be part of demonstrations, to hold fundraisers, that is to disrupt and agitate the status quo, because the status quo is violent. The status quo is shedding innocent children's blood every single day.
Right. And Habiba, what does Israel gain from killing 3,600 children and almost as many women in Gaza? And what does the U.S. gain from supporting that onslaught? What does London, what do Paris, Berlin? I mean, I just fail, and many of us fail to really grasp what the objective here is, and what kind of political, and we know there's no military gain, but what is a political gain here for any of these Western leaders or the regime in Tel Aviv?
Well, you know, as that oppressor, Netanyahu, loves to go to different conferences with his paper and cardboard and with his markers, he very recently expressed his desire to build a new Silk Road that goes right through Gaza. It's basically, it's an advancement for greater access to resources and Gaza's oil reserve. And it's also wanting to boost their own economy, fighting against China's economic advancement, because they are afraid of the new BRICS alliance, and they want USA, Israel are very threatened by this. That's why if they completely annihilate and obliterate Gaza, they can use that land, they can use even the West Bank for plundering the resources to advance their economy. Recently, there has been a 200 and something billion dollar investment from Israel to six big oil companies. And I find it no coincidence that once this investment had been made, bombardment on Gaza had started. And these Israeli politicians that have come out and called these people human animals and said that, you know what, the solution is to completely level that place. And these Israeli agents have come out and say that once Gaza is gone, we are going to call it a new place. We're going to build a new city on top of it. It is all about power. It is all about stealing resources and gaining control over how the worldwide economy should be run.
And help me understand the European Union perspective on this, Habiba. They say that they support a ceasefire, they support or they are against the high level of casualties with respect to the civilian population in Gaza, but yet at the same time, they say they're still standing behind Israel and that Israel has a right to defend itself. How does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense. It's purely words. It's purely symbolism. These politicians have to, for diplomacy's sake, pretend to care about the lives of the people of Palestine so that they don't actually look as wretched as they truly are. But even saying Israel has a right to defend themselves, they know that Israel is the occupier. So by definition, Israel is not in the defensive position. Israel is already on the offensive position, has been in the offensive position for the past 75 years. Right now, it is up to people. We can no longer rely on the governments. We can only rely on the politicians and institutions like the UN or the International Criminal Court. It is up to us grassroots people to change the narrative. It is up to us to fight these oppressors by exposing them, by not accepting their crimes, by not looking the other way. We cannot normalize genocide. Business as usual must not go on. It just can't. And allegedly today, France is proposing a new bill to their Senate that even insulting the Israeli government can lead you up to 2 years of imprisonment or a 75,000 euro fine, which is pure and blatant hypocrisy coming out of France. Because a few years ago, they were up in arms defending Jesus Charlie, which is all about insulting Islam and insulting the religion of Muslims. But currently now, you cannot even criticize Israel. It shows the Zionist Federation how much they have their hands in other countries' parliaments and laws. This shows that these countries are not democratic. There is no democracy in the USA, where so many states it's illegal to even boycott, based from the lobbying of the Zionist Federation in Israel.
Right, and Habiba, let me just share with our viewers what they're seeing. These are live images from Khorram Abad, and earlier we brought you live images from another rally in Yazd. What you're witnessing are nationwide rallies in Iran commemorating the occasion of the National Day Against Global Arrogance. Now, crowds of people, they take to the streets in different cities to show anger at U.S. atrocities directed at Iran over the last 43 years. And now this is live images from the Iranian city of Arak. We've shown you earlier Mashhad, Yazd, Shiraz, Isfahan, Arak now, earlier the Iranian capital, Tehran, Khorramabad. And you can see each city, there is a huge outpouring of ralliers. What our correspondents at the Tehran rally, Mahdi Abbasian, earlier said is a much bigger outpouring than previous years, and possibly due to support for the Palestinian people. You can see people with the Palestinian flags there in this rally, people with Hezbollah flags supporting resistance against the occupying regime in Tel Aviv that has killed over 9,200 Gazans over the last 28 days. You see a burning there now of the American flag. This is the Tehran rally. Habiba, just stay on the line for 1 second. Let me just update our viewers with respect to the nationwide rallies that are taking place in Iran today. Iranians from all walks of life are marking National Day of the Fight Against Global Arrogance countrywide this Saturday morning in Iran. These rallies are going to be held in dozens of cities throughout the country. Demonstrators from all walks of life, and also many university students, express opposition to the arrogant policies and attitudes of Iran's enemies, particularly the U.S. Now, back on November 4th, 1979, it was less than a year after the southern Iranian city of Shiraz that you're witnessing now, less than a year after a victory of the Islamic Revolution that toppled U.S.-backed monarchy of the Shah at the time, the Iranian university students that call themselves the students following the line of the late Imam Khomeini seized the U.S. embassy, and this is Hamadan now, to the, west of the Iranian capital, city of Hamadan. You can see each city, there are thousands of people participating in these rallies. Now, they seized the U.S. embassy in Tehran, which had become a center, they said, of espionage, and where the CIA was trying to plan to overthrow the newly established Islamic system in the country. And annually, there have been huge protests like you're witnessing today on your Press TV screen there, that 43 years now, every year people come out and rally against Western arrogance, particularly the U.S., and their attempts to manipulate the geopolitical landscape, not just of Iran, but of the entire region of West Asia, really the whole world, but with concern to people in West Asia, is a region that's been highly manipulated over the last decades by the U.S. and its European allies. Now, Habiba, you know, right now, and you mentioned this in your earlier comments, that the Israelis, they say that they purport that they want to go out and continue this onslaught until they wipe out every last Hamas member. And many people doubt they have the capacity to do that, to carry that out. But suppose they did. They wiped out Hamas completely. Does that mean for the Israeli regime that it is safe, that resistance is over?
No, of course resistance is not over, because whilst many, many countries and many people within the West recognize Hamas as a liberation army, it is not just Hamas that Israel is threatened by. It is never about them. It is never about an army or an armed group of people that oppose their oppression and that resist against their tyrannical rule and regime over them. Of course not. You know what scares and threatens Israel, apart from Palestinians truly just living their lives as normal, is the global solidarity movement happening as well around the world. Israel is threatened by each and every entity, each and every person, each and every message that is about freedom. I would like to mention Tawana Petty, which is a black activist in the U.S. right now, because we're talking about the rallies happening in Iran, and that is to commemorate the revolutionary history, a truly inspiring moment where people organized among themselves to show the U.S., to give the U.S. a message that, you know what, you cannot control us, you do not have power over us. Tawana Petty says, she says, when I returned from 10 days in Palestine in 2015, it took me years to recover from what I saw and experienced. And yet when I asked my comrades in the West Bank what could be done to support them, one said, liberate black people in America. I will never forget that. She goes on to say, I remember during the height of the water crisis in Detroit when folks were screaming loudly, just pay our damn bills, Detroit. Mothers in Gaza sent me letters to Detroit and Flint telling us they know what it meant to struggle without water. She says, I will never forget that. Global solidarity, to globalize the intifada, is to also participate in your own country's revolution, is to also come together with the working class in your own country and disrupt your status quo. That is what Israel is afraid of. That is what will always shake Israel. So it is not about Hamas taking up arms. It is not about Hamas versus the IDF. It is truly about people struggling for freedom versus what Israel wants to achieve against the world. Even Israel right now is funding the genocide in Congo alongside the U.S. And Congo is going through a despicable amount of violence that unfortunately...
Habiba, I'm going to have to thank you. Habiba Jaghouri, journalist and activist, thank you for joining us from Adelaide. Now we're going to go live to where Parliament Speaker Ghalibaf is about to hold a speech. Let's listen in.
And in Islamic Iran, we, in our Islamic movement, led by the late Imam Khomeini, this Islamic movement is a source of, actually, this movement revitalized Islam and was a cause and source of dignity for the Islamic community. We are now going through special days and weeks, including today, which marks the National Students' Day, November the 4th. If we look at our past, after the 15th of Khordad on the Iranian calendar, 1342 in the Iranian calendar, after that Muharram month and the beginning of the movement, in 1343 on the Iranian calendar, the late Imam Khomeini on the 4th of Avon, when the issue of capitulation was brought up in the country and the Americans secured special privileges here in this country, the late Imam Khomeini delivered a historic speech in the city of Qom. And if we look at that, we can see the grandeur of the late Imam and the way that he delivered the speech. The late Imam, on that day, he made these statements. The U.S. president should know that the most hated people in the world, that he is the most hated person before the Iranian people. All our problems are because of the United States. All our difficulties are because of the Israeli regime. And Israel has been created by the U.S. as well. This is what the late Imam said 60 years ago. And it was then when the late Imam was sent into exile. And he was sent to Turkey and then to Iraq and then to Najaf. He was sent into exile. That was the prudence of the late Imam. And that's what he knew about the crimes committed by the U.S. And he knew the U.S. well. Even if we look at the years, the past years, in 1322 on the Iranian calendar, the late Imam, it was at the beginning of the rule of the second Pahlavi regime, that the late Imam made the same statements on that day. Anyway, today, November the 4th, actually the event happened, and in 1979, the 4th of November, today we are marking the anniversary of that day when our students were martyred. Their struggles, the struggles which took place for several days in Tehran and other cities, and it was a day when, and today we are marking that anniversary, and in that day they killed our students on the streets. And after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, on the 4th of November 1979, the U.S. embassy, known as the Den of Espionage, was seized by Iranian students. And the late Imam said this embassy takeover was more important than the Islamic Revolution itself, because documents showed that the Americans were trying to, once again, the criminal U.S. was trying to bring about the same developments which it had caused in 1322. And the U.S. had plotted, had formulated a plot, a coup d'etat against the Iranian government, and the U.S. was trying to do it again, as well as other conspiracies, including war, disintegration of the country, attacking the Tabas Desert because of the U.S. embassy takeover. All these developments show that the U.S. enjoys a colonial nature and is an oppressive government. The late Imam has described the U.S. as the great Satan. And he says that all the miseries and problems that the world is facing today has its roots in the savage nature of American statesmen. History has shown this fact and has proven this. And today, the feature of the Islamic Revolution and the movement of the late Imam Khomeini, from the very beginning, one of its features has been the spirit of fighting against oppression. Resistance does not belong to today only. Resistance has existed since the onset of the Islamic movement, based on divine features and based on the Holy Quran, in accordance with the beliefs, with the Islamic beliefs of people, and they are the principles of the movement by people in Iran, as well as the entire Islamic community and all freedom seekers. This logic is a completely religious one, based on divine traditions, and will remain so. And always, the United States and its cronies, including the Zionist regime of Israel, the wicked Britain, all of them have always been seeking oppression and committing crimes in this country, even before the 1979 Islamic Revolution of Iran. But the spirit of resistance against them did not exist at that time. We take pride in the fact that in the Islamic movement, we take pride in the fact that this resistance is based on divine principles and the participation of people. Always throughout history, the United States, the Americans, under any circumstances, they acted against our national security, our national interests, acted against the progress of this country, and they acted against our independence, and they caused coup d'etats, and they waged wars. This is what history shows. And history actually is a witness to that and shows that we put up a stiff resistance against them. They are trying to deprive us of our deterrence power, to deprive us of our power to make progress on different fronts, especially on the economic front. This point should also be taken into consideration that we are not, there is no contradiction between resistance based on divine principles, given the facts, the existing facts, and also we should take our national interests into consideration. So there is no problem with that. Some people think that there is contradiction between them. No, there is no contradiction between them. Resistance is associated with prudence, resistance is associated with kindness and farsightedness, and resistance requires bravery. And the resistance front calculates everything, and of course, faith in God is also important. This is our belief. This is what we believe in. We calculate everything. We have prudence. We are brave as well. However, at the same time, we put our trust in God Almighty. Actually, God Almighty is there, and our calculations, given into consideration our calculations, God will help us emerge victorious. And on the other hand, we should pay attention to the fact that, there are some people today, many people have risen up against the Israeli regime to defend Palestinians. Let's take a look at their ideology. Is their ideology the same as ours? No, but they are standing up to oppression. They are standing up to whatever is against humanity and morality. Yes, there is no doubt about it, that the resistance front, should pay a price, but we should know that giving up and succumbing to the enemy's pressure has costs as well, and maybe the cost of that is more than resistance. The resistance front, the price that the resistance front pays is like investment, but the price that we pay for giving up to the enemy, it means actually giving them ransom. It means it is something like usury. This will have no result. In this way, if somebody succumbs to the enemy's pressure, people will lose everything they have, their freedom, their humanity, and all that. And compromise leads to bankruptcy and failure. And resistance leads to victory and dignity. A clear example of that is what we are seeing today. It is not necessary to return to dozens of years ago and see what happened at that time. The two events which have taken place over the past 1 year, if we look at that, we will find out that, well, if we continue with these principles, the future is ours. This is the divine promise. In this operation, the Al-Aqsa storm operation, it was a practical example of that, and you will see that it will also serve as a theoretical example, and everybody will write about these developments in the future. This operation and this movement was a turning point, and it actually moved history. It changed the principles of planning. I'm telling you loud and clear that all people who are pursuing strategic issues, geopolitical issues, all of them speak about one certain thing, and that is a new world order. Undoubtedly, I'm telling you, the Al-Aqsa storm operation in Palestine changed the equations of the current world order and all its calculations at the regional and at the international level. And the Israeli regime and the U.S. will never, with whatever action they take, actually, change will not be reversed. If you see, since the outset of World War I, when Britain decided at that time to set in motion this movement to establish this wicked entity in Palestine. In 1914, actually, they moved through this path until 1948, when British officials at the UN Security Council actually recognized the Israeli regime. And these shenanigans have been continuing until now for over the past 75 years. You saw what they said, and you have seen yourselves. They showed that a powerful army. They showed in their military doctrine, they showed that they have so much intelligence that whoever in the region, not only in Palestine, but not only in neighboring countries, in any place, they have everything under control, and they are an invincible army. They have always enjoyed foreign support. What they said was that we will wage preemptive wars. They always actually expanded battles and wars to areas outside the occupied territories. They were focusing on their national security, and they were proud of their actually deterrent power. They were proud of their Iron Dome. All these things and everything that they, these were their positive points, of the positive points of this Israeli regime. Over the past 75 years, these were the things that the Israeli regime had considered for itself. But you saw that all this hollow power. Well, yesterday, actually, the leader said that it is not only me who is saying that the Israeli regime is just a spider web. The whole world realized that that Israel is just a spider web. Today, what are they doing today? They use bombs to kill children, children and women. They destroy homes. Is this power? This is actually where this is the maximum. This is a very bad behavior. And this is a humiliating behavior. And this shows their desperation. The Israeli regime should know. And the criminal U.S. should know that no matter what they do in Gaza and whatever happens there, this turning point that I mentioned in equations, this turning point will not be reversed. And this key statement and wise statement and prudent statement by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, he said that this failure will never be reversed and they cannot compensate for this failure and defeat. And Netanyahu should know that, and this wicked and evil person should know that he will be the first victim of this incident. I'm telling you, in the near future, we will see that. We will see how he will be humiliated. Please, pay attention to this point, dear brothers and sisters. Please pay attention to this point carefully. The main culprit and the person who has committed all these crimes is clearly the United States, the criminal United States. We consider the U.S. as the main culprit, and the U.S. is responsible for all these crimes, and all these crimes have been committed on the U.S. orders and with the support of the United States. We never, actually, this wicked statement made by the U.S. president during his first trip after to Tel Aviv after the operation, we will not forget when these two evil characters hugged each other. They said that even if the Israeli regime wouldn't exist today, today we needed to create an Israel today. This is the wickedness. This shows the wickedness and the evil nature of the United States. And our Imam, as he said, the late Imam Khomeini mentioned more than 60 years ago on this day. That's what the late Imam said, addressing the U.S. and Israel. And today we are telling the United States, you evil United States, which are pulling shenanigans every now and then, stop pulling shenanigans.